Penguin Random House Audio presents Love and Other Thought Experiments, written and read by Sophie Ward.
The imagination is not a state. It is the human existence itself. William Blake, Milton, A Poem in Two Books. I've dreamt in my life dreams that have stayed with me ever after, and changed my ideas. They've gone through and through me, like wine through water, and altered the colour of my mind. Emily Bronte, Wuthering Heights. If we are going to make further progress in artificial intelligence, we are going to have to give up our awe of living things. Daniel Dennett, Speaking Minds, Interviews with 20 Eminent Cognitive Scientists. Rachel picked up the magazine that Eliza had left in the kitchen. The cover was a drawing of a tree with the roots embedded in a man's head, and above him a blousy crown of leafed branches arched towards the sun. It wasn't a typical image for Eliza's reading matter. Rachel turned the page. Thought experiments are devices of the imagination used to investigate the nature of things. That's a lot, thought Rachel, but she liked the sound of it. It tickled her to think of stories being used by scientists. I could be a thought experiment, something Eliza has dreamt up to challenge her hardened reasoning. If I were a thought experiment, Rachel asked Eliza as they got into bed that night, what one would I be? I'm not sure you can be a thought experiment, Eliza said. They're supposed to help you think about a problem. If you can imagine it, then it is possible. That is one theory. So, Rachel pushed away the book Eliza had picked up and blinked at her girlfriend. Imagine me. Eliza smiled and shook her head. This is what happens when the fanciful encounter the factual. I'm not sure which is which here. Quit stalling. Rachel prodded Eliza's armpit. Fine. You want to be a thought experiment? You can be a zombie. No, I've got it. You would be, yes, Hume's missing shade of blue. The colour he has never seen but can still visualise. Happy? Hume's missing shade of blue, thought Rachel as she laid her head on the pillow. Yes, I can be that. Tell me some more. 1. An ant. Pascal's wager. The 17th century mathematician Blaise Pascal argued that since God either does or does not exist, and we must all make a decision about the existence of God, we are all bound to take part in the wager. You can commit your life to God because you stand to gain infinite happiness in the infinite hereafter, with what amounts to a finite stake, your mortal life. If you do not commit your life to God, you may be staking your finite life for infinite unhappiness in hell. By this logic, the infinite amount of possible gain far outweighs the finite loss. But there is here an infinity of an infinitely happy life to gain, a chance of gain against a finite number of chances of loss, and what you stake is finite. Blaise Pascal, Pensée, 272. The ants have moved in here now. Rachel brushed the small body aside and turned the pillow over. Eliza glanced up from her book. The ants, in the sitting room. They followed us in here, Rachel said. Are you sure? I just saw one. No, are you sure it's an ant? They're so tiny. I don't know how you could tell. Eliza returned to the hardback that was balanced on her bosom. I don't need glasses. Yet. Rachel prodded her. Do ants bite? I've got to finish this for tomorrow. It's definitely ants. The same ones that were on the sofa last summer. They got in through the gap in the window, and now they've found a way in here. You couldn't put a baby in a room with ants. Eliza? Yes. Did you see them before, when you slept on this side? No. You wouldn't have noticed anyway. Maybe one. Is that why we swapped sides? The book fell away from Eliza's hand. What? Nothing. No, tell me. You think I moved you to that side of the bed because it's infested. It's okay. Read. Rachel looked at her girlfriend. I know. Sorry. Eliza didn't go back to her reading, but she kept the light on while Rachel fell asleep. She wondered whether she should get the pest controller from down the road to look at the flat. Mr. Cargin. He had a second job repairing and selling old televisions. They had walked into his workshop one day to buy an aerial for Rachel's black and white set. The man spent a long time looking through cardboard boxes and muttering about outdated equipment. Eliza saw Rachel trying not to mind the posters on the wall, each one with a picture of a cockroach or a rat, along with a method of extermination. There were so many different creatures, and all the pictures were the same size, so the termites were as big as the squirrels. Mr. Cargin stared at them both for some time. He stared at me, Rachel said when they walked away from the shop. He was fine with you. He didn't find an aerial, and he was bad-tempered about the entire transaction, though it had been his idea to start rummaging through the boxes. Eliza didn't imagine he made much money in television repairs, but she thought the extermination business might be a means of expression as much as an extra income. She had promised Rachel they would never go back. Rachel lay next to her, breathing heavily. It had been Eliza's idea to change places, because she had a new desk, and it wouldn't fit in the alcove on her side of the bed. It was a practical decision, and even Rachel could see that it made sense. The flat was already crowded with furniture, and the desk could double as a bedside table. But maybe the desk had disturbed a nest, or maybe it was the time of year for ants to move indoors. Eliza had not deliberately changed sides because of the insects, but now she would have to prove that she cared enough to fix the problem. Ever since they had talked about having a baby, Rachel had been testing the temperature of Eliza's love. Eliza wondered how many of her decisions were basically points of honour. Throughout her life, her job at the university, the bicycles and vegetarianism, even her haircut, seemed as if they were chosen in reaction to the opinions of an invisible audience. She had become the sort of person she approved of, but she wasn't sure she had chosen anything she actually wanted. She checked the pillow one last time and turned off the bedside light. She would sort out the ants in the morning. Program. The next day, Eliza cycled past the television repair shop on the way to work. Smaller versions of the vermin posters were stuck inside the display window below precarious stacks of broken televisions. She thought of all the chemicals that the bad-tempered Mr. Cargin would use in their flat. He seemed to radiate poison. Even ants didn't deserve a murderer like that. They had talked about the ants over breakfast, and Eliza had Googled getting rid of ants. All these ants look regular-sized. I can't find any photos of extra-small ants. Rachel didn't want to read about eggs and nests. I don't mind one ant, but not in our bed, and not hundreds of them. I keep thinking of that song. Just what makes that little old ant? Peppermint oil. Eliza twisted round from the screen to watch Rachel singing while she stacked the dishwasher. It says here they don't like peppermint oil. Well, that's easy. I'll get some later. She closed the page and went back to her emails. I like the idea of the peppermint oil, but I can't see how it will stop the ants in the long term. Rachel wiped down the kitchen surfaces and went to stand by Eliza's chair. She rested a damp hand on Eliza's shoulder. They're very tiny, and even if they got the oil on their feet or paws or whatever ants have at the end of their legs, it's not going to hurt them. They don't like the smell. So much for high hopes. Hello, world. Eliza arrived home.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?